Welcome to the 41st episode of the Game 4 podcast. In this episode, still recording from home and sponsored by Gaddis Gaming, we'll talk about balance in your tabletop gaming, in your group, and in yourself. I'm Adam.
I'm Matt.
And we are part of Game 4. We are an app that helps connect people together. We're currently hibernated because of the world pandemic, but we are hoping to be able to come back and connect tabletop gamers to each other. And right now, in the meantime, we are having this podcast to help teach you about how to think about your tabletop gaming, how to get more enjoyment out of it, how to get more engagement with it, that kind of stuff. And yeah, we're going to just keep on doing that until things get better, and probably through that, hopefully. So speaking of gaming and hobby, what kind of stuff have you been doing since the last episode, Matt?
Yeah, so it's been a non-very hobby-filled 2 weeks. Just it's that time of year, you know. Even if there's a pandemic, it's still kind of busy.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But sort of hobby related, but since I used a lot of my hobby materials, my miniature stuff, and 3D printers. But yeah, I made so every year. We do ornaments. Each person on in the family gets an ornament, usually in their stocking. And typically my wife buys them usually around like Black Friday at the mall, because you know, all the little shops that you know, kiosks in the mall, finds them. So this year that obviously wasn't an option, and I decided to try it myself, basically designing, modifying and printing a bunch of designs I found online to make my own ornaments.
Nice.
For everybody. So yeah, I printed those up and got them all painted in time for Saint Nick, and except for one that had an accident of somebody sitting on it by accident, they all were very loved. That one's it's gonna take some repair time, but not too bad. So
yeah, yeah. What's did you print them on the resin printer or filament?
Mostly, I think they were all ended up on the resin. They were originally, I think they were going to have some parts that were not, but I was able to craftily put everything on the resin printer. But yeah, they came out pretty well. I had to, you know, some stuff from like Among Us all the way to like, I took somebody had 3D scanned an Eggo waffle. And so I made, my daughter's really into Stranger Things. And so I made her a customized 11 Stranger Things ornament.
An Eggo. Yeah. Yeah. I get you.
Yeah. And just in case anybody needs to paint an Eggo, the, yellow, contrast paint works really, really well.
Well, there's a couple yellow ones, probably the darker yellow, I bet.
Yeah. The darker yellow one did a nice job between kind of getting that little bit of a brown, like toasted look, and then kind of that still yellow look. Yeah. It came out really well on that. So,
well, that's good to know. Yeah, absolutely.
For yeah. All your waffle needs.
Right. Yeah. In case you're having starting your waffle legion in, I don't know, whatever game it is you play that has a lot of waffle, based, you know, gameplay. No, that's really cool. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, these resin printers, I think that when I watch videos of people who are into 3D printing and are 3D printing hobbyists, very frequently they print the same stuff over and over again, especially when they're reviewing different printers. But I do sometimes wonder, I'm like, well, what do you, you know, if you don't have a secondary hobby that relates to this, what are you doing with it? But I mean, you know, Christmas ornaments and stuff like that makes a lot of sense. Like we generally think of like, well, you get a 3D printer so you can print terrain for gaming or models for gaming or extra add-ons for gaming or dividers for gaming for your, you know, cards and all that stuff. But if you're not a gamer, then what do you do with it? Well, you know, Christmas ornaments and fixing parts doing all kinds of things.
I would say the only thing that I've seen, there's some of the cosplayers are really good now that they're with large format.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, they're just starting to do some pretty cool things there. But yeah, sometimes you see them and you're like, well, why are you printing the little boats 5,000 times?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and if you're testing, you know, that's fine. If you're like, if you're on a YouTube channel and you're testing, I get it.
Absolutely.
But if you're just basically, you know, a home user who's trying to make this the best it is, but you just keep printing a little, what's that boat called? Even I forget. There's a name for it.
Benchy.
Yeah, yeah. Bodie McBoatface. And but yeah, it does seem kind of odd. Like, it seems like, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, to me, I'm always like, well, you should make cool stuff with it as opposed to just, you know, making it work better, but making the same stuff over.
Right. I can't stand printing the same thing if it's not, like, I'll even do like miniatures, you know, compare, but then I won't even use the same miniatures all the time.
Sure.
But I did see, like, because there's the, you know, the XYZ cube.
Yeah.
That people print to try to make sure that your sizing is right and that all three faces are doing well. Somebody modified that to basically Lego them so that they the top and the bottom stack. So that you
after you crank out a whole bunch of them, you can just use
you have building blocks. Well.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. That's so they're almost idea. They almost like Duplo, and I'm like, that I'm going to start using because,
like, yeah,
you know, just having weird plastic just sitting around for no reason just drives me nuts.
I mean, it's you're still predominantly using PLA for your resin or for your filament printer, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a bioplastic, basically, for people out there, so that it is generally kind of biodegradable, right? I mean,
yeah,
more than regular plastics.
Mostly cornstarch and some stuff. Yeah, that's why you cannot, if it's like going to have heat, like leaving your car, like don't leave. You know, if I've seen people that do like the phone holders for their cars, and then like on a warm day they just melt.
Oh yeah, no, I could see that. That makes sense.
So. Yeah. So yeah. Typically, unless I absolutely need it,
and then it gets rained on, you know, that's no good.
Right.
Yeah. 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 No. Absolutely. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I'm glad that was a nice Christmas thing.
So how about you?
Yeah. Let's see here. So I had been working on a Tyranid kill team on Twitch, which was seven Tyranids instead of 200. There were three warriors and four gene stealers. And I finished those up. Those are all done. I need to do some photography, but otherwise, well, I take that back. They're not completely done. I'm probably going to spray some matte varnish, but just over the bases, not over the models too much, because... So I already sprayed them with matte varnish. Actually, I take that back. I don't need to spray them with matte varnish. I already did that. That's right. It was the Nighthaunts. It's the Nighthaunts I need to do this to. But the thing is so I used Turbo Dork, like color shifting colors.
Oh, okay.
And you don't want to spray matte varnish over those colors because then they will not shine and reflect. Yeah. I mean, they'll color change a little bit, but it'll cut down on the reflectiveness, the metallicness or whatever of them.
Okay.
And so with the Nighthaunts that I did a couple months ago, when I do matte varnish them, I'm just going to try to spray on the bases and not on their cloaks, because the cloaks is where the majority of the turbo shifty color is.
Okay.
But with these, now I come to think of it, with the Tyranids, I basically painted them up until the last step, which was going to be putting on the turbo dork color, and I then matte varnished them before I put the turbo dork color on them, so they are all safe, their bases are covered, their arms are all that stuff, and then the last step was to paint on the turbo dork stuff, so I don't need to put that stuff on there for the Tyranids. So anyway, they're done. I just need to take some nice photos of them, put them on Instagram, because, you know, if you paint miniatures and you don't put them on Instagram, did you really actually paint them? I don't know. So yeah, I got to do that. And but since that's finished, I've started working on the I was trying to decide between Stormcast Eternals or Gloomspite Gits for my next Warcry warband. I will be doing both eventually, but I kind of had to try to decide which one I wanted to do, and for whatever reason I just had this itch, partially because I hadn't worked in a lot of metallics lately, and also partially because there was only five of them, but I decided to go with the Stormcast instead of the Gits.
Okay.
So, yeah, I started painting them Friday of last week. I did a session on Twitch, and then I did another one Monday. And, so I'm not doing them like are normally seen in the boxes, very frequently in the boxes. They're like gold metallic with like this kind of middle blue, not navy blue, but like a slightly lighter than navy blue kind of accent on the shield and the shoulder pads and stuff like that. I'm instead going with silver instead of gold. And instead of that blue, I'm going black.
Oh,
and I discovered something new too. I like to paint the rims on my models black, you know, the rim or the, you know, around the base. I like to paint that black. And I've been using for years a brush on black primer from Reaper. And it's worked pretty well, but sometimes it doesn't go completely black. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because it's old or whatever it is, but it just doesn't quite do it. And so it's not as black as I might like. And even sometimes throwing down a second layer doesn't necessarily do the job. So I threw down one layer on all the rims on these guys. And then when I was working on the Stormcasts, like the black on their shoulder pads and the black on their shields, I used a color called Coal Black from Monument Hobbies, the Pro Acryl paints. And I put that down as the first layer. And then I don't know what made me even want to do it, but I'm like, well, what if I just throw a contrast color over it? What if I throw Black Templar over that? Because originally my thought was I was going to throw a Black Templar down over the silver, but then I knew I would still see silver through it because it's opaque, but not completely opaque.
Mm-hmm.
As contrast paints go, it's one of the more opaque colors, but it's not completely opaque. So I just threw down black, and then I'm like, well, I'll just throw this color down over the top of it. And when I threw the contrast color over the top of the regular opaque coal black paint, it really tied it together and made it look really nice, and it got rid of any kind of like brush strokes. And it's another one of the situations where contrast paints can be kind of a glaze. And so it worked out really, really well. So after I worked on the rims on these Tyranids, I was like, or no, it was on the Nighthaunts I was doing some of the rims. And I was like, So I painted them with one coat of that black. And then once that dried, I just went over it with the Black Templar contrast paint. And it really did nice work on the rims because it really, again, helped get rid of any kind of brush strokes. It kind of solidified the color a little bit better. So I think going forward, I might do that more frequently, is like throw down one layer of black paint and then the next layer on rims, I mean, one layer of black paint and then one layer of contrast. Black Templar is the name of the color. So, I don't know. Do you do black rims on your models usually?
Yeah, it's usually that. I'm trying to think if I've used anything but black, but
like Games Workshop these days is going gray, but they used to do brown. And then way back in the day, back in the like 90s and the early 2000s, they were always this color called Goblin Green, which was, but that's like, as every base that they did back then, they just put grass on it. You know what I mean? We're going to tie that all together. But lately, like the most recently when they come out with new models, they almost always have a gray base, but I've always preferred black. It just reminds me of, basically it looks like you didn't paint that part, you know, because it looks like the black plastic of the base.
And it just kind of finishes off and it gives it a nice shadow, and I've always liked it. I always use I've always been using Army Painter's black matte, just flows really nice off of it, and it's the last thing I always do, and it's always just is a nice calming finish. I don't know.
I think it ties the model together nicely. So anyway, so I'm still working on Stormcast Eternals and all that stuff. There's this video game called Cyberpunk 2077. If you pay any attention to video games,
I haven't heard about it.
They originally announced it in 2012, which was before I started my YouTube channel. I just realized that recently. That's how long they've been working on this game.
Wow.
It's 2012. Yeah, so I, anyway, it came out a couple weeks ago, last week, whatever, and I've been playing on the PC, thankfully, because evidently I was going to get it on the PS4, on the PlayStation 4, but as it turns out, the PlayStation 4 version and the Xbox One version are not great. Like, they're all a little buggy, but those are, like, barely even working buggy, evidently.
Yeah, so those seem like they're pretty rough. A lot of news about that.
Yeah. But on the PC, I mean, honestly, I've had very few issues. Almost immediately when I first started playing the game, there was a guy who was sitting on the hood of a car and the car was not there. So he was just like Wonder Woman, you know, sitting on the invisible jet kind of thing, you know, or whatever. And I was like, huh. And then I've seen a couple other little things here and there. And then recently I had like a save game, like an auto save, like a checkpoint save that I died. And then I went to the checkpoint save and fell through the world. And then it just kept doing that. So I just had to go back to a slightly earlier save, and then it fixed it. But that's happened to me like once. But I've had that happen in Grand Theft Auto 5. I've had it happen in games.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, I've seen like stuff where they're showing like, you know, Red Dead Redemption where the horses are standing on top of one another. And
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Every once in a great while, I'll see like two people sitting on a park bench. Oh, because it's a city, you know, you're out in this big city, and you'll have two people who are sitting in the same spot on the park bench. So they're sort of like morphed together, like they got some sort of transporter accident, you know, but it's otherwise on PC, it's not terrible. So, but I've been just enjoying that, driving around town on a motorcycle, doing stuff, things like that. The story's been also good too, but the graphics and all that I've been enjoying. So that's been taking up some time, you know, but not too bad.
Very cool.
And then a little bit last night, actually, I was working on finishing up my cultist warband for Zona Alpha because I want to paint them off stream. I'm not going to put them on Twitch. I'm going to paint them off stream just so I can get them done faster. And then after that, I'm going to go into my next faction for Zona Alpha, which is it's not the military. It's, I think maybe, oh, I forget. It's like some sort of other paramilitary group that's going to be in there. And I've got the models all bought for that. So I want to get into that next and maybe get that finished over the last couple of weeks of December here. We'll see how it goes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm hoping to get back to my Blood Bowl soon.
Yeah.
So
which team are you working on?
The Black Orcs will be the first one I'm doing.
Gotcha. Yep. Yep. Cool. Yeah, I keep meaning to watch a battle report on the new version, and I haven't seen one yet, so I just haven't thought of it to do it. But I want to kind of see what kind of changes and stuff there are. So,
yeah,
cool. All right, well, our friends at Gaddis Gaming want to thank their supporters for bringing their latest Kickstarter campaign, Empire Falls, to life. If you missed the Kickstarter or want to add to your pledge, a pledge manager will be coming soon. I'm glad that they hit their goal. I was glad to also back the Kickstarter, and I was glad that they were able to hit the goal.
Absolutely, and they even got one of the stretch goals. And then he's been this kind of opened the floodgates. There's been a lot of stuff that he's been working on in the background, waiting for this to come out. Like, there's a lot of new models coming out. He even has like a graphic novel that he showed.
Yeah, I saw a post about that.
Yeah, which looks really cool because, he's got tons of stuff coming. So, I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And as an added thank you to all of our listeners, you can now get 10% off your entire purchase of World War One and World War II miniatures at Gaddis Gaming's website when you use the promo code GAME4. That is GAME and then the number 4, all one word. Not game 4 like GAMEFOR, but game GAME number 4.
Yep.
Follow the link on the Gaddis Gaming. Follow the link on GaddisGaming.com. That is GaddisGaming.com or in our show notes. And thank you to Gaddis Gaming for sponsoring the Game 4 podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. So the topic of today's podcast is about balance in tabletop gaming. It's inspired by a question about kind of personal gaming balance from one of our listeners. Actually, we got a listener request from Carlos, and we'll be sending Carlos a Game 4 t-shirt. So we'll be reaching out to Carlos and getting their address and going from there. So yeah, it's basically the question was a lot about balance and about how to, you know, like, and it relates to some degree, I think it can relate to some degree to burnout, which we've talked about before, but it can also refer to kind of interpersonal stuff. So there's your own personal balance, but then there's also gaming group, gaming club, whatever, however you want to, you know, organize that, like balance there as well. So, I mean, like, okay, so I guess first step is like, you know, what are we talking about when we talk about balance? What are we referring to?
Right. And we don't mean like everything has to be equal parts. Like, I played 2 hours of a board game, so now I need to play 2 hours of this other board game to even it out.
Mm-hmm. It's honestly, for most people, it's more of a personal feeling almost, I think. And, you know, if you find that you're doing something a lot, you know, and again, this is more on the personal side, but for a personal side, if you find you're doing something a lot to the point where it becomes less fun, you know, and I'm a big believer that games should be fun. It's one of those situations where you then have to try to make some, I think, changes to be able to do that. And you know, when we're talking about balance, we're not talking about game balance. We're not talking about like, oh, these guys are, you know, this particular army in this, you know, miniature game is overpowered, or, you know, this particular color in mana in Magic is overpowered or something like that. We're talking more about like the games that you play. I mean, it can even get down to, frankly, in some situations, your balance within your life a little bit. Like if you game too much to the point where maybe your significant other is like, hey, you know, we need to help with this, or hey, this is a, you know, or it's just, there's a lot of things that, you know, and not just, you know, from a bad aspect either. Sometimes you're like, I need to play some games right now to help balance the rest of my life, you know?
Kind of what I alluded to earlier. Sane. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, absolutely.
I didn't hobby very much the last couple of weeks. Yeah. I did other things, you know, I even helped my nephew build his first Pinewood Derby car. So, you know, I was still doing some fun stuff, but yeah, I recognize that, oh, I need to do some more hobby. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's start with not just personal balance. Let's start with like group dynamic balance to some degree.
Right. Which is probably the tougher of the two because.
Right. Yeah. Because you can't like control other people much. You know what I mean? Like it's a situation where. Well, I mean, you're not supposed to. I mean, you know, if you've got, you know, mind control powers, you should probably keep those to yourself.
Or shock powers.
I wasn't going in that direction, but yeah, that's something. The main thing is that I think that like, so, and we've all been, if you've been in a gaming group before, whether it's a gaming group that gets together to play board games or a gaming group that gets together to play role-playing games, or a gaming group that gets together to, you know, you and your friends get together and play CCGs or something like that, that, you know, there are people in each group who are going to be different from each other. So rarely do people all like the same thing. That as I get older and older, I realize that that's the case. And so, you know, like you may end up having to change up your genres because, you know, you might be, and it depends on the group. Some groups just get together to play board games, right?
Right.
And some groups just get together to play RPGs and, you know, and that kind of stuff. But some groups play a lot of different types of tabletop games.
Right. It's a gaming night. And then, yeah, you might play different things.
And if you do that, it is a little easier, I think, to balance because you can sort of like dip your toe into this and do this for a while. And, you know, role-playing game like campaigns can take a long time, but you can also do one-shots, which are generally games that take just one session that aren't like long campaigns. And you can design a bigger game, like, you know, a more well-known game, let's say like Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder to be a one shot. It's a little harder. I think most of the material that comes out for those is designed to be longer term, but you can do it, but a lot of them are very dense. So there's potential for very long campaigns. Don't you?
Right. Right. Yeah. You're not going to level up your characters multiple times on one night.
Exactly. Normally. That's what I'm pointing. Yeah. But there are in indie games specifically for RPGs, there are plenty of games that are designed to only be played as one shots. So,
right.
And that could be something if you've been playing in your gaming club or whatever, your group, your campaign, your party, if you've been playing Pathfinder for a year and you finally got to maybe like some sort of stopping point and you know you're going to keep on with these characters, or maybe you're going to start all new characters on a new campaign or whatever, maybe as a palate cleanser in between, you play some one-shots from some sort of indie game, you know, out there. Like you've been playing... You had been playing at the beginning part of the pandemic Lancer, is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But that was, again, a longer campaign, wasn't it?
Right. But yeah, and we mixed it up some other things as well.
So there's balance there, yeah.
Absolutely. And and also if like a dungeon master, what is the online PDF thing? The
online PDF?
No, World like 20? The site. It's not. No, no.
Drive-through RPG.
Right, drive-through RPG, and there's one specifically for dungeon masters. If you do their weekly newsletter, you usually get at least once a month, like a nice one shot that's you can actually be for free, and then you can go back and pay for it if you want. But dungeon you can always Guild? Dungeon Masters Guild. Thank you.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I knew I was gonna come up with it eventually.
Yeah, like this. I think it was like last week's was like a fun kind of. I think they used like the Ravenloft campaign setting for Dungeons and Dragons. And mm-hmm. It was a kind of a fun Christmassy theme type one.
Christmas vampires.
Yeah. So, although I think it was still D&D, but I don't. And so there was still, but yeah, it had a, but it had, yeah, like a good, you know, campaign, but it had, you know, some Christmassy type stuff where, you know, there was snow and presents were being stolen and people were being murdered. So,
sure. So, yeah. Like yeah. Normal Christmas. Yeah. No, but so, and yeah, even following along with like the seasons and stuff like that, if it works within your RPG, like that can also help to sort of change things up and bring a little bit of balance in. If you've been doing, and you've done both roles as well, so you know this far better than I, because I've never been a GM. If you're being the GM for a while, there's times when you get sort of tired of being a GM or you would like to just play for a bit too. So
absolutely,
being able yeah, to this... switch between.
Yeah, like if there's people that are out there that only want a GM and all the power to them, but for me, mm-hmm. it's kind of nice sometimes just showing up at game night without having to, you know, have basically prepared the whole night ahead of time.
Right, yeah, yeah. No, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, you know, and like we said, if you're a situation where the gaming group is not just attached to one genre of tabletop game, if you've got the ability to switch between, and I think this is the case with a lot of gaming groups, but not all, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. you get people who are like, you know, we played board games for a couple of weeks and now we're going to switch over and do an RPG that's going to last for a while. And then we'll maybe do take a break and hit pause and then maybe do some, what's that called? Cube draft. Is that what you, when like one person brings all the magic cards and then you just do a quick draft and there's lots of different formats where you don't have to go out and buy a bunch of cards, or if you already have some, you know, that kind of stuff. You could, I've seen people do that because I think people, and it's not so much that people get bored. I don't feel it's a boredom.
It's, you know, variety is the spice of life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's like, like boredom would be like a negative thing. Like if there was a baseline, boredom would go into the negative. And it's not that necessarily it's boredom. It's just more that you want to add, I don't know, like it's, you want to go more positive and switch things up before you get to the point where you start to get bored. Maybe that's part of balance. You know what I mean? Like not
and that's
too
like,
far
yeah.
away.
Yeah. And I've seen that it saves some like long running game stuff like Gloomhaven. Mm-hmm. Gloomhaven is definitely not a one night board game. No. It goes on forever and ever and ever. We could, you know, my group could play that every single week, but we found that, you know, after like 2 or 3 weeks, we were starting to get a little burnt out on it, or just, mm-hmm. you know, kind of not as excited about it. And we would, you know, throw like, oh, hey, tonight we're going to play some, you know, fun games from yesteryear, or, hey, this new game just came out. You know, I just got this Kickstarter, or I just bought this new one from the local game store. You know, mm-hmm. let's try this out. So,
and that kind of speaks as well to the different types of specifically board gamers, mm-hmm. sometimes where you have some board gamers who always want to play the new thing. That's the thing that they're interested in, is whatever's newest, whatever's hot, whatever's new.
Right.
And then there's the other folks, maybe even in sometimes in the same group, that just want to play the standards. They want to keep playing Catan or Ticket to Ride or Carcassonne or, you know, Pandemic or whatever. And they're not mm-hmm. super interested in playing a lot of new stuff. They'll do it, you know, but they're not super keen to do it. It's not the thing that, for whatever reason, they are very, very interested in playing, you know, whether they're trying to like get better at certain games. And so it's almost like a practice thing where they're playing it over and over again, or it's right. more of a, like a comfort food sort of a thing, you know? And that kind of thing, you know, I love Ticket to Ride because I used to play it with these people and now I've moved and now I've found this group. And when I play Ticket to Ride with these people, it makes me feel better or whatever. And right. so when you have those types, two different types of personalities in the same, group, you kind of have to balance. If you just go with one, if you just play the new shinies and you never play the old stuff, that you're going to lose that person, you know,
right.
Very frequently. And so I think that that's also something to keep in mind. And role-playing games have a GM or a DM, a game master, a dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
Gaming clubs technically don't, but very frequently there's somebody who, I don't want to say runs the group, but we've talked about this term a lot as instigators. I don't like the term alpha gamer. But, you know, like they're the person who's kind of like, hey, I have this new thing. Let's check it out. Or, hey, and they kind of steer the boat a little bit. There are times right. when you've got people who are like, oh, well, let's do, you know, but, and so if you're that person in your group, it's kind of up to you in some situations to make suggestions.
Right. Because, yeah, sometimes people will just show up and like this, I said, you know, like for me, you know, it's an escape. So sometimes I don't want to sit there and try to think, oh, what game are we going to play? And mm-hmm. I don't want to have to go and explain the rules or have to learn the rules, or, you know, I just want someone to just decide what are we doing, or
yeah.
give me like 2 out of 50 games to pick from. I don't want to have to pick from all 50.
Right. And it's a situation of like, sometimes you have to read the room, you know, like, you know, everybody gets together and they're, you know, it's usually after work or maybe on a weekend, you know, mm-hmm. and so maybe it was a rough week, maybe it was a rough day or anything like that. And so maybe sitting down and learning a brand new complicated game that's very different from most of the games you've played is not necessarily the direction you want to go in tonight. And people kind of being able to sort of compromise and kind of understand and see how things are going and have that sort of balance and go, okay, well, yeah, let's just play some Carcassonne, or let's just play some, you know, whatever, something we've played a bunch of times. None of us have to learn it. We all know it.
Right.
I think that can be very helpful mm-hmm. and help to keep the balance pretty well. You know, and I think that, again, like there are different types of groups out there. There are groups that just play board games or just play role-playing games or just play miniatures. And then there's groups that swap back and forth between things. But the thing that's interesting is that sometimes this can be even done in a single session. You know what I mean? Like, especially with board games.
Right.
You could play 2 games of Ticket to Ride and then something new that just came, got delivered on Kickstarter. You know what I mean?
Right. Or play
in
like
a single session.
Yeah. Or if you're playing like a long game, you could play a quick, like filler 15-30 minute game in between before, you know, playing another round of whatever the long game was, or maybe a completely separate game, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah. It's harder to do with some of the other game types out there, but it's also something to think about because you don't have to think about it in a session by session with specifically board games. And to some mm-hmm. degree, I think with collectible card games, you could certainly switch between playing like normal, especially
modes,
like, yeah, you could be playing a normal standard, let's say Magic. And then when some more people show up, then you could switch to Commander because you can play Commander up to like, I think 8 people. Right. So, you know, I mean, that's helpful too. Usually like those types of games, card games are designed to be played one-on-one. Sometimes you go bigger, but with a game like Commander, which is it's Magic the Gathering, but it's an offshoot of it. It's also known as EDH or Elder Highlander Dragon. No, Elder Dragon Highlander, something like that. And it's basically you're playing with a hundred card deck, and you can't have any duplicates except for land, and there's a bunch of other little rules, but you can pull mm-hmm. cards from you know, at nearly every set, and it's a different way to play, but it's interesting. It's the last way that I actually played Magic, and it's interesting because you don't. It depends on the group too, and this I think also ties into balance because it's not just like the games that you want to play or even the genre. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the play style. The last couple of games that I played of Commander with some people at the local shop. This was a couple of years ago. These people were all Magic pros, like not actual professional Magic players, but like they were, have been doing it for forever.
Seasoned players, yeah.
Exactly. Seasoned players is a good term. And I'm trying to like literally kind of relearn Magic and kind of learn Commander and how to do it. And they are trying to figure out the easiest way or the best way to pull off the craziest combo from all of the cards that they've been collecting over the last 20 years. And it was a tough crowd to hang with, frankly. And so that was, that's a situation, you know, because it's also important to balance, especially within a group or club, skill level. You know what I mean? Right.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Having, you know, the min-maxers played with the casuals all the time is probably not going to be a great way to do everything, especially if you're playing very crunchy games, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, another way to kind of, with your balancing your gaming group is that, you know, typically most games, depending on the size of your gaming group, do not include everybody in your gaming group. Sometimes there's a couple games going on. And so you can swap out and kind of, you know, hey, I know these guys are real serious about Euro games. I'm going to play with them for this game. And then I'm going to swap over to these guys that are more about having fun and casual. And I'm going to go do that. So you don't even have to worry about the specific people swapping. Sometimes you can just swap which people you're gaming with.
Sure. I mean, and sometimes that's, you know, different nights, different sessions. But sometimes if a gaming group is big enough, it can just be mm-hmm. two games going on at once, like in somebody's basement. I've been to little gatherings like that years ago where, like, you know, these four people over here are playing this game and then these three people over here are playing this game. And, you know, that can work out well, too.
Right. Yeah. One of our local ones has, you know, four or five games going on at the same time, depending on, you know, turnout and number of people per game. So,
yeah, like in a bigger gaming club. Yeah, definitely. That, especially with board gaming, that can definitely work with wargaming, with miniatures. I think it is a little bit different because so many of those games have a tendency to be one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So the group thing is a little bit different. Now, if you have a club, if you have a wargaming club, then almost by definition, it's sort of split up into multiple games just because of the generally, like I said, one-on-one nature.
Right.
So you can still, like, if everybody at a club is playing this one thing, it's a little hard if you want to change things to try to find the right balance. But again, if you do, like I talk about quite frequently on my YouTube channel, if you become some sort of advocate for a new game, then if you go to the gaming club on Thursday night when you folks all get together, if you bring a small skirmish game and models for both sides, then you could say to somebody who's like looking for a game, would you be interested in playing this? And if they're like, no, I came here to play Age of Sigmar and that was it, I don't have any other models. You can go, well, look, I have, you know, this, I have two teams. They're small teams. There's like five, six mm-hmm. models per thing. So you could use this one and I'll use this one. I'll teach you the game and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes learning a new game is also definitely going to help with balance.
Right. Or, you know, like you were talking about earlier of variants, like maybe the game for wargaming wasn't set up to handle six people playing the skirmish game at once, but it doesn't mean you can't try. I mean,
yeah, that's sometimes true too. Certainly.
Sometimes just, you know, like having six people playing, even if the rules get a little goofy and stuff like that, can just be fun. You know, if you're
absolutely.
If you're you know, just out there to have fun and hang out and just see what kind of craziness you can come up with, you know.
I mean, some tabletop war games do have the ability to go with, like, they'll even sometimes have special rules for, like, oh, you're going to play this with three players or four players or that kind of stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. we noticed that when we've played
Underworld.
Yeah, Warhammer Underworlds is that they'll have, like, it's designed to be a two-player game, but they have special rules. They're like, well, if you play three, then add this thing to it. And if you play four, then this is the difference and that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, that's a smart thing on their part. And we've played that way, you and me and Jason, and I swear to God, we played a four-player game once at the shop.
Yeah, we played four at the shop. And that was a lot of fun because it took away from the feeling like you're like going after, like always being attacked to, like, oh, a couple of us can gang up on the one gamer that's a little bit better than all of us. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So with gaming groups and clubs, part of it is you have to kind of like gauge everything with your own personal kind of feeling, like, how are you feeling as far as balance is concerned? And you also have to be a little empathetic as well and look at some of the other people in the group in the club. Like, if somebody's like really down on the concept of playing this brand new game that just came out, because and they never seem to like new games, then if it's a big enough group, maybe you have some breakoffs and like, these people over here play this game and play a lot of the classics and just keep doing that every week. And some of these other folks like to try the new stuff and things mm-hmm. like that. And understanding that and trying to help steer that is helpful. But what about balancing your own gaming? Like, just specifically, like, again, focusing on predominantly yourself as opposed to, you know, trying to run a club or anything along those lines. Very right. frequently, it helps to help fight burnout, which we've talked about before on this mm-hmm. podcast.
Right. You know, and like, you know, one thing that like I learned early on starting at the tabletop gaming is that, you know, just because it's called a club doesn't mean it's, you know, an exclusive club. You can be, you know, you can join, you can do an RPG night on Tuesdays, on Thursdays do board games, you can do Friday night Magic, and then on Saturday mornings go and play 40K at the store.
With like all different people and stuff like that?
Right. Yeah. You don't have to have the same people you game with all the time. You know, or you could just be like, oh, I like this RPGs, but I'm going to be in three different campaigns with, you know, across three different types, you know.
Yeah. I do know some people who play in multiple, like more than two different RPG campaigns at a time. Maybe not necessarily every week, but, you know. I'm amazed at the ability to keep track of all that. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot of it's like voice actors who can just immediately pop into any character that they've been, you know, doing for years and years. I'm just amazed to be able to just jump into that. And I think that like, I would be constantly like, all right, well then I'm going to pull out my pistol and I'm going to shoot. And you're like, we're playing Dungeons and Dragons. I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's right. I don't have that pistol with the smart link and the right. No, that was Shadowrun.
No,
that
was Shadowrun. Totally, gotcha. Totally was kidding. I totally knew that.
I thought that was a spell. Yeah, no, I mean, and so for me, that would be kind of tough, I think, but I think you're right. There are definitely people out there, especially if like this is your main hobby and you don't have, like, you got a job and stuff and, mm-hmm. and maybe a spouse and maybe you don't have kids, like, because the kids thing can slow things down a little bit. But if you've got that much time, that much free time, and this is your main hobby, you could easily do 2-3, you know, different sessions a week, potentially, you know? Mm-hmm. So, then being able to switch it back and forth between, like, you've got this gaming club that you play miniatures with, you get this group that you play board games with, you know, that kind of stuff, and going through all that kind of thing. I know that in talking about just like in tabletop wargaming and in the hobby portion of it, I've done videos in the past about motivation, and I talk about trying to, you know, keep building, keep working, stuff like that. And that gets a little bit into balance too, because I've found a great way to stay motivated is if you get tired painting, then switch to building. You know, like, I just like, oh, I just don't want to paint these guys tonight. All right, well, I'm going to build these guys over here because I haven't built them yet. And being able to switch, sometimes it's just switching between products or projects. I don't mm-hmm. want to paint these guys, so I'm going to paint these guys. Or I don't want to paint these monsters, so I'm going to paint these monsters, or whatever it is. But there's also times when you want to just not paint at all, and then you switch to building, or you're tired of building. Right. And now, I mean, normally the way it works is you build first and then you paint. So you've got a kind of a natural switch there between those two modes. But there are times when you're just like tired of painting, and so you want to switch back to building, and that can help there mm-hmm. just to sort of break things up and give you some balance. And you also, you can't paint forever, because eventually you'll have to build some things to paint again. You know what I mean?
Right. So, well, and then eventually you're probably going to play with them as well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's true too. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that there are people out there who, like, I love to keep my hobby constantly moving. So I'm adding stuff to it all the time, and I, Lord knows, have plenty of stuff to paint in the basement. So it's never a problem for me usually to be like, if I'm ever just like, oh, I should just paint something for fun, I can make that happen. But if I'm generally aiming towards getting things done for games that I want to play. But then the point is then eventually to play them. Now, right now, a lot of us obviously are sort of stuck at home with the pandemic and things like that.
Right.
So it's difficult, but, and that's a balance issue that's going to hopefully fix itself sometime next year. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, right now I know there's a lot of folks that are, especially in the tabletop wargaming miniatures, side of things, that are getting a lot of things painted so that when they can start playing again, then they'll have a bunch of stuff to take to the shop and show to their friends, and it won't just be gray plastic. What about, and we talked a little bit about this, like, what what other kind of things, like when you are switching from being a GM to being a player, do you, like, not only does it just kind of change your gears a little bit, which helps with balance, do you notice that you, like, learn things from other GMs as well when you're playing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's stuff that I'll pick up and go, oh, I like how they did that. Or like, oh, they kind of did this different. I wonder why they're doing that. It's so, you know. And there's sometimes, yeah, where I'm like, oh, I didn't like how they did that. But that's okay, too, right? And then even,
learning what to not do. Yeah.
Right. And even, you know, like, just if you're just a player, switching between, like, character types or art types. Like, if you're always playing the healer in your group, it's, you know, that can get tiresome as well. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're like, oh, replay six different types of RPGs, but I'm always the, you know, the brute fighter. Like, maybe some people will like doing that the whole time, but, you know, sometimes, you know, finding a balance of where you're like, okay, well, yeah, this long campaign I just got done doing, I was a heavy magic user and relied on all that. So now I'm going to, you know, be, you know, a rogue and be more crafty and, you know, hide in the shadows, or I'm going to be a more of a magic user or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Balancing the type of character you play, just so that you're able to try different styles of play and different, even mechanics. I mean, there's definitely much different mechanics to being a fighter than there's to being, say, like a magic user. Yeah, that makes
a lot of sense. And there's very, you know, very different ways to play based on your motivation. Like, if you're, you know, a paladin that's always looking for just, versus, you know, a sorcerer who, you know, came from a background and you're just trying to, like, be basically a mercenary trying to survive and, you know, paying out for the highest dollar, you've got a very different ways to play. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's I think that there's a lot of, specifically in role-playing games, you have a lot of options for changing up play style. You're right. There are plenty of people out there who do have a tendency to play kind of the same type of character over and over again, but you have a lot of options to change things up, you know, as you switch between characters and between different systems and different, you know, even like eras or, you know, backgrounds, you know, you play a sci-fi game, you play a fantasy game, you play, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I think that with board gaming, a thing that you can do to help balance that, you see this happen a lot with board gamers, especially if you've been board gaming for a while. There's kind of almost like a joke in the industry that eventually you've played board games long enough that sooner or later you will try to start making your own or delving into game design, which we did a video or a video. We just did a podcast about kind of getting into games, how to you know, kind of get into game production and stuff like that relatively recently with Lee.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that, like, even starting from a place of like, I like this game, I should try to figure out how to make an add-on. You know, not something you're going to probably sell because that might, you know, it's not your IP and all that kind of stuff. But sitting down and just the balance of like, not so much just playing it as a product, but looking at it as a system and as a game that you know, and how do I change it to the way that I like, or how do I add something to it, something like that.
Right, you know? It's almost like the people that do a lot of mods for video games. You know, sometimes you're just doing some styling. Like, you could take a game that doesn't have miniatures and find miniatures or craft miniatures to put into it to enhance the game and maybe give it a different feel. Or you can go, figure out some, you know, expanded rules. Maybe it's a great three-player and four-player game, but you usually don't have enough to play. It's just you and, say, your significant other. And so you try to figure out a way to make it two-player work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, and you can even go as far as to decide, you know, well, I'm sort of tired of playing the same board games all the time, and I really wish there was a board game that did this. I like this game, but it has just this missing this thing, and I like this game, but I don't like the way this part of it works. Mm-hmm. Is there a way where you can basically kind of take... You know, they say all the time that, what is it? Good artists create, great artists steal, something like that. And so, you know, taking parts from multiple different games that you like, tweaking them, modifying them, and all that kind of stuff, that will then make it so that you can build something that you really enjoy and maybe also find some balance to that as well. And then I guess with, like, you know, like collectible card games and stuff like that, it's relatively simple to just, and it depends on the card game, but let's take the big one, Magic. It's pretty simple to basically just change up your deck to, if you're getting tired or if you're like, oh, I just, you know, I'm always playing it this way and I want to balance out and try something different and make it a little bit different. So I enjoy the more width and depth, you know, the breadth and width, whatever, of the game. You know, so if you're, again, like I said, if you're playing something like Magic, you could be easily like, you could just be playing blue deck all the time. And you're like, you know what, I'm going to try to build a red and black deck, which I've never done before, let's say, and go from there. And so that could be something that could help you out.
Right. Another item you could give yourself, kind of like personal restrictions, like just for fun, like, okay, I'm going to try to build a deck where all my cards have to start with a vowel. I can only use ones that have a power of 4 or higher, or 4 or lower, or something like.
Yeah, there's a style of Magic, from what I understand, that's called I think it's called Pauper, and I think you can only play with commons and uncommons, like no rares or like all that kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, it's interesting to give yourself like these restrictions just to see if you can still kind of enjoy it, or, you know, and you usually can, but then like, how do you enjoy it, and how do you, because it's
right.
A lot of times what balance is to, it's not just to do things differently, but it's to think differently, I think. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's if like, your brain gets stuck into a rut, the balance needs to change.
Right. I always remember art class was great about, you know, teaching you that, like, okay, this art project, we're going to do this. And you're like, you got all excited. Okay. And they're like, but you can only use, you know, like one colored pencil with the, you know, you have to pick the color to do it in. And then, and you're like, oh, but it, you know, at the same time it worked, you know, you got to learn more about how to affect with shading and darkness and stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, maybe you like drawing and stuff, but having that restriction put on you taught you something along the way of how to do that. So when you go back, you know, you can apply that format.
I went to art camp one summer in high school, and my roommate would do these amazing drawings, and they would just be in ballpoint pen. Like plain old, just like a Bic, you know, and he would just do these amazing drawings and like all this shading and all this stuff. And he was basically just trying to figure out with just a ballpoint pen, like how to like get these different things that you would not normally, especially from like a distance, you'd look at it and be like, oh, wow. And you get up close and you're like, oh, wow, this is all pen. This is just like ballpoint. And he'd be like, yeah. And it was very cool. So, you know, that's, again, making you think differently about, you know, again, a style of play, you know, or that kind of thing. There's a lot of things I think that you can do within the realm of gaming to help balance things. And balance is important because it keeps you gaming. If you get overbalanced and go too far, when, you know, if you look at a scale, like a seesaw, if the seesaw is not balanced, then one side hits the ground, which is not fun. I don't know if that's a very good analogy. I think it's a pretty lousy analogy. It's not very balanced. But the idea basically is that you want to stay balanced because it keeps your, I think, enjoyment of the overall gaming, you know, something.
You right. Know, it's just like everything else. Like if you can go and eat at the same restaurant all the time and order the same meal all the time, but you're probably going to get bored of it. You know, luckily you have to eat to survive, so you're going to be probably fine and not die, but you're going to get bored with it. And
but it's not ideal.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, no, I agree. Yeah, because I know like Penn of Penn and Teller, that was pretty much how he lost all of his weight, was he was told to pick one item, and the item that they picked was a potato, because his doctor that it came up with the weight loss idea was basically told, well, you can't, you know, yeah, you can do it, you know, with just all meats or all breads, but you could never do a diet where you focus on as a starch. That's just not a thing. So he was like, basically to like prove people wrong, was like, oh, potato. And that's how the diet starts, is they, you can have as many potatoes as you want, but you can only have potatoes and you can't put anything on it. And it basically got him bored of eating to the point where he only ate to keep himself alive versus, you know, eating for enjoyment.
Right.
Stuff like that.
So exactly, yeah. With that, in that situation, he purposefully unbalanced so that he would not enjoy eating as much.
Right.
But with gaming, then, you don't want to do that, obviously. But well, yeah, that shows the opposite.
Right. And he found out that later on that, you know, where he used to have to overseason everything, that he found that, you know, just a little pinch of salt and something he could now taste again because it refocused his balance from having to have extremes to having, you know, a more focused thing. So.
Yeah, that's very cool. I don't know that I would be able to just live on potatoes though, personally. But you know, he's a stronger man than I.
Well, now he can eat whatever.
He basically reset his brain as far as food was concerned.
Exactly, like you know, you went to the like the strained carrot level of your life. Yeah.
But for gaming, let's try to stay balanced as opposed to go all one way. I think that's probably the better plan. But that's cool. Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Game 4 podcast. If you've got questions or comments and you're watching on YouTube, please leave a comment below. If you're listening via your favorite podcast player or just aren't into the whole YouTube comment section thing, then you can feel free to reach out to us via email at podcast@iamgame4.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our website at www.iamgame4.com. That is www.iamgameforcom. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.